Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 4. Not Fade Away Review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Brian.
And we are so excited to talk to you guys today about the first episode of the second half of the first season of Fear the Walking Dead. That's right. As always.
Wait to convolute.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what I do sometimes. Not often. Enjoy it while you can. As always, we want to let you know that we may or may not spoil the regular show, or I should say The Walking Dead Prime, whatever you want to call it. So if you have not seen all there is to see, this is season 1, episode 4, review, Not Fade Away. And it was written by Megan Oppenheimer and directed by Carrie Skogland. Brian, take it away with the news, ratings, and info.
Well, there is no news or info, but I will say this for info. If we sound different tonight, it's because we are using, for the first time, my brand new mixer. So that means eventually Woo-hoo. We will be able to do some new stuff. So anyway.
Can you say bumper?
Yeah, bumper. We'll get the bumpers. But ratings, we're a little down again this week. 6.62 million. And 3.3 in the 18 to 49. And that compares to last week's 3.6 in the 18 to 49. Now, you may remember Emmys were on Sunday night as well as football. So it was some stiff competition that Fear the Walking Dead had to go up against. So all in all, it did pretty well.
Well, cool.
Now, as far as ratings, what about our ratings of this episode? Ruthie?
I'm so glad you asked. Sometimes I have a really hard time coming up with something clever to say as far as, you know, like this many numbers of blah or whatever. But this time I kept coming up with different things. So I had to finally settle on only two out of the many that I had in my head. So I picked 10.2 out of 12 safe zones or 8.5 military occupations for those of you on a 10-point scale.
Like us. Anyway.
Well, if you can't do math in your head, which I have to admit I had to use my calculator for that one.
In my case, basically the rating changed with every time that I watched the show, and I watched it many times.
I did notice you had something different earlier.
Yes, I did. So, I gave this episode the best rating of the season, 9.5 Mama Beatdowns.
As I said,
I watched this episode 7 times. Wow. And the first 6 times I changed my rating each time. And it, started with a high rating, ended up with had a low rating that was lower than the lowest. And then as I watched it a few more times, I kept finding more and more stuff until I realized that the one major problem that I had with it doesn't matter because they gave us something better. So I loved it.
That's interesting. Cool. We also, we got some feedback or some ratings from our Facebook, and I'm so excited. I can't remember the last time we had some listener reviews or listener ratings also. So, yay! I'm just tickled.
Yeah, thanks.
I know. It's so cool. So, let's see. Malika Tazy or Tazy or Tazy. I'm not sure how you say your last name.
I believe it's Malika. And she's new to the Facebook group. And I actually talked.
I was talking about the last name.
Oh, Tazy. Yeah. I actually talked to her the other day.
Yeah.
She's loving the show as much as we are.
Cool. So. Well, she gave it 9.5 out of 10 suspicious as hell doctors, and I couldn't agree more.
And we got another rating from Lynn Moore, who gave us 8.5 families torn apart.
Yeah.
So let's go to our famous 5 of 5, our awesome sauce. I definitely need to find a bumper for awesome sauce.
Yeah, we'll do that sometime.
All right. Well, I'm going to start it. And my awesome sauce moment was what I called Madison's sojourn, her little, you know, nice little stroll into the dead zone. I thought it was awesome, but I will mention here that Judy, PB and Zane, in her comments, she mentioned something that in the feedback that I had to think very hard about. And yeah, she made a good point, but I loved it. I thought it was really interesting. And you notice no zombies this episode, not a single one.
Right.
So cool. What do you got?
Well, to me, there was only really one awesome sauce for this episode, and you already have it written down.
Well, then you go ahead and say it.
It was when Maddie slapped the crap off of Nick. I was like, yeah. I mean, I'll read what you wrote because I pretty much felt the exact same way. You said, why did I cheer a mom doing what some might consider child abuse? I think it's because A, he's an adult, and so it's not really child abuse, and B, he deserved it. Yeah, pretty much. I'm like, yeah. Jerk face. Can you say junkie, anyone? That was another thing. I almost gave it 8.5 IVs between the toes, or 8.5 slick junkies. I'm full of them tonight because I'm like, man, that kid, he is just, oh, yeah, I don't need it. I'm cool. I'm totally off of it. But, ooh. And I thought it was so, like, so telling that she was like, you just don't know. I'm like, he's right. Because she knows some stuff. And I believe this happened after she went outside the fence, right? So, you know, she's kind of like, crap's getting real.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny you said that because I nearly gave it 9.5 stolen morphine drips. Yeah. I don't know, Nick. I don't know what to say to you, man. Here I am talking to a fictional character. Reality.
It's okay. I do that sometimes.
Yes. But anyway, Nick, I don't know what to say, man. I don't get what he's trying to do. I mean, is he trying to impress?
He's just trying to get a fix. That's all he cares about because he's an addict and addicts will do anything to get a fix.
So it seems. Okay, well.
Even steal morphine from an old dying man.
Yes. All right. So there is so much to discuss in this episode that we are intentionally not going to discuss at all.
Oh, yeah. So, take too long. We just don't have that much time.
Yeah. So first thing I want to bring up, and it was my initial problem with the episode, was the time jump.
Okay.
9 days. I didn't expect it. I am okay with it in the end, but
that's good.
Yeah.
I was ready to talk you off the ledge, though.
The thing is, though, when I started thinking about it at one point, I was mad. They gypped us. I mean, there was 9 days of the apocalypse. The stuff that they've been promising in this series that they were going to show us, and they didn't show us. But I think in the end, we see something better. So, yeah. But I'll get to that later.
Well, I think you're right. On at first blush, it seems like, what, 9 days? But I mean, come on. How many scenes of air quote domestic bliss can you really watch? You know, I mean, it's like, okay, just I liked it, actually. I appreciated the time jump because it was like, all right, we're in the thick of it now. And it kind of, without having to show you that they have gotten into a routine, so to speak, they kind of, you know, they just went for it again. Like, I mean, this show has been doing that quite a bit. It seems like they're just going for it. They're like, all right, here we go. 9 days later. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was very unconventional. It was something I didn't expect in this context. Like I say, I didn't really have a problem with a 9 day jump, but then when I realized after the fact that suddenly, well, there's no people around this little conclave. So
yeah,
no doubt. That's a whole bunch of action that we didn't get to see.
Well, I mean, who knows if we would have seen it anyway, right?
Right. And in that beginning, of course, we heard Chris, who annoyed me with his little mention of his dad to say Travis, that little weenie.
Oh, he did call his dad Travis, didn't he?
He did.
Okay, yeah. Okay, go on. Carry on.
Well, anyway, him mentioning the man versus nature again and the dogs, it seems to be a theme of the whole season.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
So what is it with, why do they have to make the military commanding officer? It's such a trope to be a dick. I mean, couldn't they just make him incompetent or something, overwhelmed? I don't know. That was one rub I had against it. Just, it seems such a cliche.
Well, if you think about it, though, it's a cliche for a reason. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember what his rank was. I wasn't looking at his uniform that closely. I'm assuming that those people are National Guard, which is...
No.
No? Are they Army then?
No. Yes. And that makes me...
So they're regular Army?
Yeah. There's... I'd have to look it up. There's an act that prevents
martial law,
armed forces. Well, yeah, but the armed forces aren't allowed to set foot and, you know, be engaged in the territory of the United States. But clearly that was waived. So,
well,
yeah, their army, their U.S. Army.
Yeah. And I believe would probably also go out the window if we actually got invaded. I mean, obviously. But, okay, so they're not just the, 2 weeks out of the year, every other weekend type of military, right? They are actual regular army, I guess, if you want to, whatever. I can't think of a better word. And again, I can't remember what his rank was. I don't know if he's actually an officer or if he is an enlisted man, but, and I don't know, I mean, if he's a lieutenant, if he's a colonel, if he's whatever. You know, I don't have any idea, but I do know that he probably is something like a higher rank of some kind. And honestly, to get to that kind of rank, you kind of have to have the attitude that that guy has. It's not that he's trying to be a douchebag on purpose. He just kind of, that kind of goes with the territory. You know, it's like he's in charge. He expects people to listen. He's not used to dealing with civilians, for one thing. He's used to dealing with either, maybe occupied people of different nations or something. If they, you know, I don't know, if he was one of the people who was in Iraq or whatever, let's say, then it would be the civilians of a foreign country that, you know, he doesn't care about. So he's kind of like, that's the mindset of that type of person. And it is a trope, to be sure, but it's a trope and a cliche for a reason. You know, there's a, it's not just pulled out of thin air, I guess, you know, or something. So, but I mean, I didn't like it. I thought, you know, jerk, but it's not without merit or cause or whatever.
I got a little governor vibe when he was shooting golf balls. I couldn't help it.
Yeah, that was pretty.
It was funny when he was talking about Doug Thompson, you know, being a head case, and then he Yeah, that was funny. His reaction when he's hitting the golf balls. It's like, we already have a head case. It's Moyers.
Yeah, it's you. You're the head case.
Yeah.
But no, really. I mean, I think also I don't know. I just, he's following orders and that's all he cares about. So.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can try and figure out what his rank is. So carry on talking. I'm going to get a look at his uniform.
Well, now I really didn't know if we should talk about it here or talk about it in the What Did We Learn segment. But I think we have a bit of a conspiracy, or as Damon Wayans would say,
there's a conspiracy out there. You hear what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy. A C-O-N conspiracy.
A C-O-N conspiracy.
And that's, if you don't recognize that, that's from In Living Color.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I watched that.
Anyway, I always think of that when a conspiracy comes up.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, yeah. And that is courtesy of my new mixer. Woo-hoo! So anyway, yeah. So, you know, we have Doug Thompson, and then we have Hector Martinez and Griselda. And I'll get to Griselda a little bit. But, you know, it seems like they're taking him away. And it makes me wonder, are they just getting rid of him, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know.
Then there's the whole flickering light. Now, this was the part with the flickering light that I needed to watch it multiple times because I didn't get it all the way through.
You mean the reflecting light?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Chris saw a reflecting light, and so did Maddie. And that's what was recorded. But when Travis saw it, it was not that at all. It was gunfire. So I didn't even pick up on that when I first watched it. But when I watched it with headphones on, it's gunfire, all right.
Yeah, I thought so, it was gunfire, but I thought maybe I was hearing wrong.
Yeah, no, you weren't. And so basically what it seems like, and I, for the life of me, I do not understand why this is, and hopefully we'll get an explanation. The military is going in to the areas that aren't, you know, considered safe zones. And instead of bringing in the survivors, they are killing them. So basically, you have these 12 safe zones. And if you look at the fearstorysync.com, there's actually a map on there. And they have that these, you know, 12 zones, which I'm kind of going ahead from what I was going to say later. But our zone is called Safe Zone India. And there are, anyway, yeah. So there are 12. And they are roughly around the same population. So about total of those 12 is around 50,000, maybe just under it. That it's all information that I picked up on the map that was a part of the story sync. So What the hell is going on? I don't get it. I mean, clearly, and I guess this was always, you know, like if you think of TS-19 from season one of The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. You saw, you know, Shane in the hospital and he saw them mowing down uninfected civilians. So it seems clear to me that the military is going out killing civilians, essentially helping along the apocalypse because they're killing survivors. So I don't get it. I don't get it. Do you have any insight at all? Because I still don't get it. I hope I get an answer next week.
I would say no. I don't really have any idea what's going on or why they would seemingly do that. Other than initially, I think when we were watching TS-19, I kind of assumed that they were just kind of maybe freaked out. They were starting to lose control. And so they just started shooting anything that moved, kind of a thing. But I mean, because honestly, anything else doesn't really make any sense. But if you take into consideration this, then I don't really know. Honestly, I mean, I couldn't even begin to say what I think is going on or why. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't. And, you know, I don't know if this is Moyers, you know, going rogue or I don't think that's what it is. I think he's following orders. So I don't get it. Is it a cover up? Is it?
I think he's definitely following orders.
Yeah. I mean, if it's a cover up, it seems like a pretty extreme cover up.
Or a pretty dumb cover up. I mean, why? What do they have to cover up?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to cover it up by literally making the human population extinct.
Yeah. Well, that's one way to cover it up, I guess.
Yeah.
The only good way to keep a secret is to have only one person know about it.
So, I mean, are they taking these people that they're taking back to, you know, the military or the government compound? Are they doing experiments on them? Are they culling the herd? Like, basically, you know, maybe that's why they took Nick, because, you know, they're thinking of like ne'er-do-wells and junkies and addicts, criminals, the sick, you know, the invalids, all of that stuff. And just
non-productive members of society, in other words.
Right. And just eliminating them.
It's a good question. The head cases.
Yeah. But still, none of that explains why they would be killing civilians. And it made me wonder, is Tobias in this enclave too?
Ooh, good question.
He's got to be.
I would think that we would have seen him if he were in this one, you know? Maybe he's the one doing the flashy light.
Yeah, let's hope not, because if that was him, he may be dead now.
Unless he got out.
Unless he got out.
Or away.
Yeah.
Or something. Don't kill my dreams.
Well, Tobias, we're pulling for you. Yeah, so I wonder if he's actually in that safe zone or not. I'm hoping he is.
But. Well, and how big is this safe zone? I mean, at first it seemed like it was just their neighborhood, you know, but now it seems like it's a lot bigger.
It is. It's one of the smaller safe zones from what it shows on the map. But, you know, and I'm not really knowledgeable when it comes to L.A. You know, I've been there a few times, but, you know, I don't know L.A. County and all the little, you know, suburban towns. But it does seem like these little safe zones are just spread about across L.A. County. And maybe even in Orange County, I can't tell based on, like I said, my lack of knowledge of the LA area. But but anyway, I don't get it. It's fascinating. And this is why I say, this is why when I look at this episode and I think to myself, you just gypped us 9 days, but you gave us a conspiracy. you wiped out the population. You're causing the apocalypse, you know? So that's why my mark, the rating of the episode for me started going up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was, it's definitely, I mean, it's all kinds of layered, you know, if you really think about it, instead of just taking your initial reaction, which is, man, this is so slow.
Yeah. But I, like I said, I think this is the best of the four so far. I think it's just so complex. And the funny thing is, and you see this both on the Facebook feedback and even with coworkers that I talk to about the show, they're all talking to me now. They all know I do a podcast. So, what'd you think of the episode? So I today was had somebody come up to me saying that they love the show. They love it even more than The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I had someone come up to me saying they're done with the show. So,
yeah, you know, it seems like it is very polarizing.
It does seem it's very polarizing. And I guess that's understandable because, for that matter, I think people's take on The Walking Dead itself has always been polarizing.
True.
If you were expecting lots of zombies in this show, doesn't seem like you're going to get them. At least, you know, you might in the next two episodes, but you certainly didn't so far.
Yeah, not initially. And it kind of makes you wonder, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I mean, they've got this place locked up so tight that, I mean, I know we saw military aspects and, you know, attempts, I guess, in the show. in the other show, but it makes you wonder if this is actually still going on in present day The Walking Dead. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're still, like, they still have this place locked down, and they still have not, like, they're surviving the zombie apocalypse. And you know what I mean? Like, they this safe zone is still going strong, I guess. They haven't been overrun, I guess. That's what I'm saying.
I certainly get what you're saying. And I wonder that myself. And I guess we'll find out, but I'm hoping that they're not stuck there for this will be like the farm on season two.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, but we'll see.
Okay. So before we go on, I think this guy is just a lieutenant. I mean, if you look at his uniform, he has a single bar on his hat, and a second lieutenant single bar is like gold colored, and a first lieutenant, the single bar is like silver colored or something, but his is kind of like dark metal, but I think he's at least a first lieutenant. But that does not make any sense to me, because he seems way older than a first lieutenant. Like, a first lieutenant, a second lieutenant is when you graduate from college and, you know, or whatever, and you are commissioned, you start out as a second lieutenant. And then after, I don't know, 2 or 3 years or whatever, I don't think it takes quite that long, you get promoted to first lieutenant. And so you would be like, what, 25-ish? So he seems too old to be just a first lieutenant. So I don't know if that is a mistake on the part of the writers or what, but anyway, that's what I found out.
I don't know.
Me neither.
But makes me wonder about, with all this, since they're taking away people, of course they've taken away Nick, but they also took away Griselda. What's her last name again?
I can't remember.
Salazar. Yeah.
Yes. And if you think about it, I was thinking as I was watching this episode the second time, I mean, why did they show up in the dead of night? You know, I mean, they couldn't come in the day and, hey, we're here to take you, you know, to the hospital, blah, 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 kind of thing. No, it's like you're trying to be suspicious and shady by coming at night like that.
They certainly were suspicious and shady. But, you know, when I think of Griselda, I think of...
Look what I found. I'm going to name her Griselda Gunderson.
Of course, I mentioned that in a previous episode, but that was from The Grove when Mika had her little doll and she called it Griselda Gunderson. So I found the clip.
That's funny.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the question that I have is, why did they leave Daniel behind? I mean, of course, we don't know if they took Hector Martinez, I think. Ramirez, sorry. I think it's Hector Ramirez. Anyway, the patient with the heart, congestive heart failure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him and, you know, his wife was going to go with him. Of course, we don't know. Maybe she didn't go. And why didn't they take Daniel? I don't.
Well, if we're taking your supposition and drawing it out to its logical conclusion, it's because they didn't take Daniel because he would cause trouble if something shifty is going down at this military hospital. And, you know, you can't have people who can defend themselves there. And that's exactly what would happen. Daniel would probably wig out. But I was actually quite surprised that he didn't cause more of a fuss when they were taking his wife away, because he was certainly very fussy about it, you know, in the previous episodes. So,
yeah, I don't know. It makes you wonder, but I will say that, you know, he obviously had some kind of premonition for what was going to happen, because he had that conversation with Maddie. And I think I said it last episode, I am loving Reuben Blades in this role. I think he is one of the most interesting characters on the show.
Yeah.
And he's just knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. I don't think he had a premonition so much as he had experience.
Well, yes, that's what I mean. Because
he's lived under a military dictatorship before, I guess. I don't know which country, but some country.
El Salvador.
El Salvador. He lived in a military dictatorship in El Salvador. So he's sort of, I mean, he is way more, you know, as Americans, we've never had this happen ever.
Right.
So it's not even in our recent history, you know, it's not something that even the really oldest old people here remember.
Right.
You know, no one can remember a time when there was martial law in our country. And so we don't really know how to react or know what's going on, or, you know, all we know is, hey, you are oppressing me and I am an American. What is going on here? This isn't, you know, you can't do this. And, you know, that's kind of, I think, what the rest of them are thinking and the way that they're acting, certainly. And I mean, when, like, for example, when Moyer is standing on the truck and he's giving his little speech, people are like, when's the power coming back on? How come we don't have this? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And how come we can't move on? That kind of stuff. And he's like, hey, I'm, you know, I talk, you listen. That's how it works. And, you know, the Americans are like, no, that's not how it works. Well, Daniel has had experience with this and he remembers it from his boyhood. And so I'm sure, you know, to answer my own question, I'm sure he didn't really fight back that much more because he knew, for one thing, it would be pointless. But I have every belief that he fully intends to sneak out and go find wherever they are because he knows it's 50 minutes away. Did you see it 50 or 15? Anyway, it's not that far away. And I'm pretty sure he's going to take Maddie with him.
It was 15 minutes away.
15. I couldn't tell if she said 15 or 50, but I was like, eh, either way, not that far.
Yeah, she said that there's not a lot of traffic these days.
Right. Yeah, which in LA is a miracle.
Yeah. So it makes me wonder, like, his story was obviously when he was a boy, and I'm just, let's say 65 in 2010. That would make him, come on, Brian, do the math. Subtract 55 from 10 to 1965.
1960-ish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the 60s.
Yeah. So in the 60s, this happened. And in the Civil War in El Salvador was, I looked it up, it was 1979 to 1992. And supposedly a lot of horrible things happened during that, including the military killing civilians, just like this.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
okay,
he said.
No zombies, but.
Right.
You know.
But like he was describing about the river and all that jazz.
Right. Right. So it just goes to show you, you know, that he has a good idea of what's going on. Again, to me, it doesn't explain why it's going on. Hopefully we will get an answer, but it does explain the kind of things that we're seeing, just, yeah. You know.
Well, it definitely lets you know that he knows what's going on. He knows what's going down. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a road trip next episode and they're going to find out what's going on. And I don't have any idea if Travis is going to go, but he might after seeing what he saw at the very end. But I feel certain that Daniel will take Maddie because she didn't, like, he says, where'd you go? And she says, outside the fence. You know, not even, she doesn't equivocate even a little bit. She's just like, yeah, that's what I did. I went out. And I mean, he just accepts it, you know. No, he doesn't try to, oh, you shouldn't have done that. You know, he just, well, what'd you see? Kind of a thing, you know? I mean, he's very pragmatic, I think. And he is a very interesting character, that's for sure. At first, I found him a little, like, irritating, but I like him, I think.
An enigma wrapped in a riddle.
Swaddled in a mystery.
Yes. But I got a kick, since we were mentioning Griselda, I got a kick out of Ophelia and that look. I almost put this in my awesome sauce. That little look she gave when she was kind of, you know, making out with that soldier. I don't know if you picked up on it.
I don't know that I picked up on any looks, but I was picking up on something.
If you watch it again, you'll see she just kind of like rolls her eyes. So she was basically using her feminine wiles there.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I got that without
Yeah.
Without the eye rolling thing that I obviously missed. But yeah, I was like, man, she's totally playing this guy. She's like, oh yeah, so kiss, kiss, kiss. Hey, what about the medicine?
Yeah. And my impression, he's no Moyers. He didn't seem like a bad guy to me. Just by the way he was talking, although, you know, we didn't get to spend much time with the guy, but
but he was one of the guys who was taking away Nick and Griselda.
Oh, was he? I didn't pick up on that.
I think so. I looked at it like two or three times because I wanted to be sure. When you are when you're watching and like Daniel tries to go out there, you know, he tries to go for it, I guess, and they kind of like shove him back, and Ophelia's like, hey, you know, she's like, what, like, what are you doing, and why are you doing this, and what's going on, kind of a thing, and I was trying to see for certain whether or not that was, like, he was one of the guys, because I think that she would kind of, you know, she would kind of act like, or maybe she would think that she had some kind of influence on him or whatever, and that he might not act that way towards her or something, if, you know, I don't know. Again, trying to use the tools in her toolbox, if you will.
yeah, I did pick up on the fact that when this was going on, Travis was trying to say, you know, talk to Moyers, and someone, it may have been this guy, said it doesn't matter. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure what that means, except that Moyers wasn't giving the orders.
Or that maybe he did give the orders.
One thing that I did pick up on is that character, and yeah, sure enough, we did see Dr. Bethany Exner in this episode, that Sandrine Holt. A lot of people seem to know her from stuff. I know I've seen her, but
she's been in some stuff.
She's not someone that I recognize right off the top, you know, but I know a lot of people do know her. But anyway, she says to Liza, I think, that they ask, are you the one that determines, you know, who gets the help? Or, and she says something like, well, you know, I do have some help. So, you know, I'm taking that to mean is that the military is basically helping her in a more of a advisor. She's advising and they're telling kind of thing.
Okay.
So one thing that I picked up on that scene was the whole thing. Now, is Maddie drinking? I mean, we've seen her a couple of times, like, drinking some kind of...
I think she was, like, definitely chugging something at the end.
The way she's been... I've seen her a couple of times drinking some, you know, clear liquid in a way that doesn't make me think it's water. It could be, but...
I think she's definitely, you know... coping.
The way that she went to Travis and, you know, she's like, Liza, she did this, makes me think that we're gonna have a bit of a showdown when those two meet up again, and I imagine it'll probably happen in the next or the following episode. But was that really Liza's fault? I didn't think so.
Well I don't know that you can necessarily look at it in terms of fault or guilt or whatever, because clearly no one really has the full picture. So when she says, you know, when she tells whatever doctor lady that, you know, he needs help, she's just thinking of trying to help him. You know, she's not thinking about, if I point out the junkie, then he's going to get taken off to the, you know, the place where they put down the animals, kind of a thing, you know?
Oh, jeez, the slaughterhouse.
Yeah. Like, I was going to say the farm, you know, in air quotes, the farm, where people say, farm. Oh, yeah, he's spots out at the farm. He's having so much fun, but he's really dead because they had to put him to sleep.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was thinking with that, is that I think her intentions were there, but, you know, she didn't know what she was doing by simply introducing the doctor to Nick.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, she
start a chain of events that would, and like, no matter what happened, maybe they would have taken him. But I think, you know, she was able to tell right away that, you know, when he was trying to be all sly there, that she could tell he had been using.
Probably. I think that, I mean, and Maddie just needs someone to blame, you know, and it's easy to blame her because she's not technically part of her family, you know.
Well, and they're adversaries to begin with.
Right. So she doesn't come at it from the perspective of, oh, it's okay, she was just trying to help my kid. She's coming at it from the perspective of an action of hers directly resulted in my kid being taken.
Yeah.
So
the other thing too is like, again, this may have been intentional, but did they really have to get Liza to like decide on the spot, you know, don't get to say goodbye to anybody, including your son, you know, are you coming or not? You know, it just, I would think that she would have had at least a minute to say something to someone.
Well, again, that kind of, that to me is another indicator of something is going on, because that is how you get people to, I mean, you have to, I don't know how to explain it very well. They put her in a position where she had to make a snap decision immediately because lives depend on you and we need your help a lot, you know, and it's not like kind of, it's sort of like the perspective of, if we give you too much time to think about this, to think this through, then you might realize that, you know, you might realize that we're trying to, you know, hornswoggle you or whatever. So,
yeah. Yeah. And it seems that, you know, they're probably don't have a lot of medical staff. And I have to say this, though, when I when there was something that Dr. Exner said, she says to Liza, I'm not familiar with these or something like that. And it sounds like Liza had done some, you know, unusual
charting
procedures. Yeah. Yeah. Unusual charting. And of course, you know, what the unorthodox treatment for Hector. I got a Wesley Crusher vibe.
That's hilarious. I actually took that to mean that for one thing, that was how the doctor could tell that she was not actually a nurse yet, because I'm fairly certain that they take a class to learn how to chart properly so that everybody does it the same, you know, so anybody can get a chart and look at it and know what's going on. And I'm guessing she has not had that class yet. And so she's just kind of making it up as she goes along, maybe. So that's what that was an indicator to me of. And I think also that's another tool that the doctor uses when she is, you know, she's taking this girl, this person, this young woman, whatever, however old she is, this woman who she knows is in nursing school, because she kind of like admitted as much, oh, I'm just, you know, in school or whatever. So she knows that this girl wants to help and wants to be a nurse. And she's been acting like one for, you know, for all general intents and purposes, she's been a nurse. And so
she obviously has a talent.
Right. She has skill and, you know, talent or whatever. She's good with the people, obviously, because a lot of people had said something about, you know, she's the only reason I'm alive, blah, blah, blah. So she's sort of, you know, she kind of strokes that ego a little bit, and the whole, you know, we need you, but we need you to come right now. That's kind of a, you know, that's like really, you know, playing to her, you know, her desire to help, I guess.
Yes. Come with us to Hollywood and become a big star.
In the meantime, I've got this back alley that I need you to work out of.
Yeah. So, Alicia
is going crazy.
Yeah. Tattoo in blood, it seems.
I think it was ink, but she was, because she was poking herself, she was bleeding.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't pick up on that. It seemed like I got the impression it was more like a you know, like she was scarring herself or something. But that makes sense. I'm sure we'll find out soon. But the other thing,
self tattoo, weird.
So we got confirmation about Susan and the fact that note that she wrote that Alicia read near the end of the episode there was.
Oh, I was wondering. Okay.
Yeah, that was basically the suicide. Yeah. I didn't get it until I realized, like, who's Patrick? It's like, Patrick. Okay. Yeah.
That's funny.
So Susan wrote a new note to Patrick and, you know, was saying that it sounded like Susan said that this was to be prophesized and was a long time coming. I don't know what she saw. Okay, you know, maybe she saw Peter or something.
I don't know, the ending makes a lot more sense now because I kept racking my brain to try and figure out what did Alicia see.
And that's the thing, you know, it's like that's why every time I watched it, it's like I picked up on some little nuance that I hadn't picked up on the time before. And, you know, that's why it's like, it's better than I thought.
And yeah, for sure. Like, yeah. I completely forgot her boyfriend's name. And so I was thinking that she was writing a letter or whatever to her boyfriend.
Oh.
And I mean, that's what I thought. Both times that I watched it, I thought that she was voicing a letter that she was writing to her boyfriend. And I kept thinking to myself, how is she ever going to see him again? Like, you know, I mean, she was wigging out last episode saying that, you know, that's not him. He's not like that, you know. And I think now, though, it might be kind of, I mean, it's been 9 days. He's surely dead.
And he's probably been exterminated, for that matter, by the
probably
local military.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear friendly local extermination squad.
Yes. Call the Orkin man.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, man, that's crazy. I don't know. I thought, okay, well, now I don't think she's quite as crazy, but I was like, man, she's going crazy. What is she talking about? If I see you again, it's fate. If not, it's whatever. And, you know, I don't know. I was just like, cuckoo, cuckoo.
It's very, very sad, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally sad.
And I wonder where Patrick is now, if they called the herd when he was taken.
Yeah, he was taken away too. And I was thinking about that too. I was like, man, did they ever bring Patrick back? But I guess not, because he wasn't in this episode.
Surely didn't seem that way.
Yeah.
So one other thing that I picked up on was, you know, supposedly this show has been shooting episodes 2 to 6 in Vancouver with externals in LA. And I don't know about you, but I saw a lot of LA in this episode. There's some terrain there that is definitely not in Vancouver.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't really tell. But honestly, I don't really pay attention to that kind of stuff that much. I mean, they're not going to blatantly stick something there that would not be in Los Angeles, you know? And so unless there's something there to take me out of it, then I'm just going to believe that they are where they say they are. Like I said, unless I saw like a shot of the Statue of Liberty or something, I would believe that they were in Los Angeles. But they won't purposefully put anything in there that will take you out of the story, you know? I think what are they called? Cinematographers or photograph editors or something. I don't know. The director of photography, right. The DP, that's what it is.
Yeah.
The director of photography would certainly not do anything on purpose or even by accident to clue you in to the fact that they're not actually shooting in Los Angeles. And so as long as they don't make that kind of flub, then I'm not going to notice.
Well, it definitely seemed that it was in LA. I mean, I don't think that you're going to see arid conditions like that in Vancouver. It seems to get a lot more rain.
Ha! You think?
So that is what else do you have?
I thought, like I said, I was really really digging on Daniel's character this episode even more. He was just You know, I mean, like what the 9 most feared words are. I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And I think that they are experiencing that to the full extent right now. They're basically, I mean, they're dependent on them for everything. And I don't know that, people of a certain, I think it kind of ebbs and flows, honestly. People of certain generations are naturally more suspicious of the government than, you know, maybe their parents were or whatever. I'm thinking of like the people who were kids and teenagers and young adults in the 60s are probably more suspicious of the government than their parents were. And maybe by the time the 80s rolled around, they were a little bit more complacent towards the government. But then, you know, once again, I think maybe in the time that we live in now, I think that the kids are probably more suspicious of the government than adults would be. And I don't know that for sure because I'm certainly not, I'm not 100% trusting of the government, like really. So I'm not, I mean, I'm not one of those people who's going to, you know, run off and start an anti-government militia or anything like that. But I don't always just, I'm not going to just take what they say for granted or that they're going to necessarily tell the truth. But on the other hand, I also, unless I were in a situation like this, I wouldn't think that they necessarily had a reason to lie. But if I were put in this situation, I might start, I would certainly question. So it's interesting, I think, that some people, and I thought it was also interesting about the, at the beginning of the episode, they were certainly drawing attention to the differences between Travis and Maddie. I think, you know, Travis just kind of believes and Maddie just is more of a skeptic and just makes you wonder why is Travis, you know, just kind of not really questioning and Maddie does. And she, I mean, she says to Chris, they should ask the soldiers or whatever, or the government or something like that. That's, you know, that's what they're supposed to do or something. And I don't think that she necessarily really meant that.
No,
I don't. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, initially she was saying that she, like, if you remember what she said in the pilot, you know, right. She was saying that they would tell us and all this. So yeah. Maybe initially she believed it, but I'm sure at this point she has come around to realize that that is not the case.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to, I think if you have someone close to you who is an addict the way that Nick is, and you are accustomed to people trying to lie to you, manipulate you, you know, do anything to try and get what they want, then she probably is a little bit more naturally suspicious, not to mention the fact that being a guidance counselor as opposed to a teacher probably also gives her a little bit more of that kind of perspective as far as, you know, not just trusting what the kid tells you, you know, kind of a thing, but to be a little bit more, I don't know, suspicious is the only word I could think of, but you know what I'm saying? Like if you have two kids who are fighting in front of you and they're, you know, both saying the other one started it, then, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas Travis is the English teacher and he seems like he's the teacher that everybody likes. And so he probably doesn't really have any cause or reason to suspect his students of any kind of bad behavior or whatever. And so he probably is not accustomed to that kind of stuff. At least that's what I was thinking. But I feel like it was different at the end.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very, very interesting plot twist that they've done. And kudos to Megan Oppenheimer for writing this episode. And I think that's her first episode of TV.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah, I looked her up. She's an actress as well. So,
cool.
You know, I don't know if she's writing full time now. I'm not even sure if Fear had a writing staff. You know, they only had 6 episodes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I think she did a good job.
Me too. So. All right. I can't really think of anything else. So let's move on.
Well, the funny thing about moving on, our next segment is, what did we learn? And the reason why this is funny is we couldn't help ourselves. And everything that we learned, we already said.
Well, that's okay. We can reiterate really quickly.
Yeah. So there are 12 safe zones in the LA area. According to fearstorysync.com, you will see a map and you will see that they are in Safe Zone India. And it mentions on that map, there are a list of what appears to be populations, and they're all around 4,000. So that makes it probably just under 50,000 in total population. So maybe, I don't know, 10,000 military? Or would it be more? I don't know.
No, they wouldn't have more military than civilians.
No. I didn't mean that. I meant like if you add the government and the civilian, or sorry, the government and the military that are still in the area, is that another 10,000 people? I don't know.
Oh.
So does that make a total of 60,000 out of what? 9 million metro LA?
Well, if they have successfully eradicated all of the other living things or non-living things.
Yeah. And I, as I mentioned before, they are soldiers in the U.S. Army. This was actually confirmed on StorySync. There's a nice picture there and a clip for next week, and it's pretty clear they are Army. I guess the other point, we already talked about it yet again. Why are they killing civilians? I don't get it.
I don't know either.
Feedback. We actually got a lot of feedback this week.
Yeah.
So let's get started. Actually, we got a piece of feedback from last week, but it came in just a little too late. But that came in from Jeff Gentry, who is now going to be co-hosting the Gotham Undercover podcast for GSM. So
yeah.
Congratulations, Jeff, and welcome to the team.
Yeah.
He said, good episode. I enjoyed getting to know the characters. I'm enjoying getting to see the group dynamics start to form, but knowing what's coming, I want to see them get out of town. And doesn't look like that's happening, or at least
not yet.
Didn't happen the next episode.
Okay. So for this week's episode, we have Robert Courtney says, oh, and this is edited for content.
Yes, I have to clean it up a little bit.
Robert understands. As soon as I saw Nick chilling in the pool, I was like, all right, where is he getting the beep? Then when we found out, frack! The struggle is real.
I put down in the our notes, fudge. Always think of A Christmas Story. That's
funny. Yeah, I always think of frack or frel.
Yeah. Oh, good old Battlestar Galactica. The next...
and the next Farscape. Frel is from Farscape.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't watch Farscape that much.
I just watched it recently. It was really good. Sidebar.
Oh, okay. PB and Zane, Judy, I mentioned before that she had something interesting in her comments. So Nick under the bed with the morphine drip in between the toes. Ouch, that boy is in trouble. So is the guy who is supposed to be getting the morphine. Sure, the military looked stupid. Sure, making the military look stupid. No one will listen to anything, it seems. So Travis is the, quote, mayor now? Yeah, we never talked about that. What do you make of that?
I think that was kind of a dig because he doesn't, I mean, he says kind of Mr. Mayor, like sarcastically or whatever. So,
well, it certainly seems like he's like, he's certainly not the mayor, but he's sort of being a leader.
Yeah, well, Maddie calls him man of the people, you know, do your man of the people thing. So, I mean, yeah.
So anyway, I'll continue with Judy's comments here. She says, interesting turn. Madison goes outside the fence alone. What honest to goodness person would do that under the circumstances? at least don't go alone and take a weapon of some sort. Guessing there has to be a learning curve of sorts. Did the military kill the people in the house outside the fence, or was that more flashing? I think we kind of answered that one. Mm. I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. Can't wait for the time when this family pulls itself together and fights back. And I mentioned that, the point that I took from her comments, she did make a really good point about Madison. It's like she went out there, she went by herself. For that matter, she cut the fence. So maybe the infected, it's going to take me a while to get used to saying that, could get in through that hole, maybe. And, she goes there without a weapon. It didn't look like she picked up that gun with the dead guy that was in the middle of the street there. Mm-mm. So it seemed kind of silly for her to do that, but obviously she was motivated. But yeah, I mean, she could have been gunned down just like they were. What do you think?
Yes. Yes. I actually, when she went outside the fence, my immediate thought was, I was like, yeah. But then B, I was like, oh crap, she's a goner for sure. Or she's going to get caught. Those are my two thoughts. She's going to get caught or she's going to get dead. But neither happened. So yeah. There you go.
Okay. Well, I am going to go out of order and do the next comment, but you'll see why in a minute. The next comment comes from Jeff Kozalenka. And he says, steady, but a little too slow for my liking. I get that it is setting the stage, but I found myself drifting off. So the reason why I wanted to read that is Jeff is a very, very, very dear friend of mine. We grew up together. I've known him as long as, well, as terms of friends, I probably know one person longer than Jeff that I could think of. Jeff is a very dear friend of mine. His wife, Allison, and Jeff are like diehard Walking Dead fans, and they've done something that Ruthie and I haven't had a chance to do, which is go on the tour in Atlanta. I am very envious. But anyway, Jeff, great to hear from you on the podcast, and don't be a stranger.
Yeah. Okay. The next bit of feedback we have is also from Malika Tazi Tazi. I don't know. Sorry. And this person, it's a she, right? She's a she.
Yes.
Okay. She says, for me, this episode has been the most horrifying of all the episodes so far. No need for walkers/infected to get me to that place. It was suspenseful and they really showed those characters well. The splitting up of the families was very traumatizing. I think Travis is finally realizing the gravity of the situation, especially at the very end on the rooftop. Oi! That was a very powerful episode.
Oi!
Oi! I agree. And she gave it her rating of the 9.5 suspicious doctors.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, I was talking to Malika earlier this week, and thank you for joining the Facebook group. And I think Robert also joined the Facebook group this week. Welcome. Welcome to all of you that are members of the Facebook group. And one thing she said, I should probably share this, but she said that she agrees with me more than she does you. So anyway.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
Glad you got such delight out of that.
I know, but considering the review I got this week, I needed something. We'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Jeff Gentry, again, left feedback for this episode as well. He says, both series are telling the stories of personal drama and the human condition through the lens of zombies, but this one is more of a thriller and shows how things break down. I've enjoyed it so far and look forward to the next two episodes. if this series intrigues you, he recommends to read The Stand, personal drama told in a different way, but one that is close to this. So
cool.
Yeah. And we also got Lynn Moore, but we gave her a rating earlier. So if you would like to submit your feedback, how would you do so?
Well, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Find out all the ways to do it there, or you can go on in our Facebook group, which is what, facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. Is that it?
It is.
.com.
And we want to strongly encourage all of you listeners to join up with us. You have to apply, but we let you in as soon as we see the request.
Right.
And, the interaction on there has been very lively, and
yes.
It's been great. I'm really, it feels good to know that all of you are listening to us and are participating in our community. The community means a lot.
Yes. And just as a reminder, when you do your feedback on the feedback thread that we throw up in the Facebook group, we don't really want to sit here and like read the whole thread, because I mean, you guys can do that. You guys can interact in the Facebook group, and we certainly want to encourage you guys to interact, but we want to point out the people who are specifically leaving us feedback. So we're not really going to read all of the little replies and all that kind of stuff. So, but it seems to be working so far. We're so excited that you guys are communicating to us. Yay.
Yes. Our system is, we post something just before the episode is about to start saying, leave your feedback here. And thankfully, that's what you're doing. So thank you.
But we would really love to get some audio feedback too.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't always need to hear us. Of course, you might want to hear something like this.
There's a conspiracy out there. You hear what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy. A C-O-N.
Oh man, I love that show.
Yeah. So, but anyway, leave us your audio. We want your audio. And the deadline is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode aired. And that goes for Fear and The Walking Dead 2, both of them.
Yeah. And I mean, that's really just for the feedback through the website, because we have to have time to get it. But if you go and put stuff on our Facebook group and we see it, we'll throw it out there.
And we should also mention our Twitter, which is Walking Dead GSM. So add us to your Twitter. So
yeah. Yay.
Twitter. So one of the best ways that you can, you know, support us is through iTunes and leaving us a rating or review. And we got a rating this week from Mugshot Lizzie, who left a 3-star review, which, you know, okay, to that I'll say it wasn't a 1-star review. And she liked you, Ruthie, but she doesn't like me too much. She says, I need to be more succinct. So from now on, 1-word sentences only.
Not really.
Anyway, your point is noted, and I will try better to be more succinct. So, but anyway.
All right, then. So if you think we're doing awesome or terrible, please let us know by telling us first on our Facebook group, and we'll resolve the issue, and then going to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes and leave an awesome review.
Yeah, and help restore my confidence. No, actually, you know. I think I've been on fire the last couple episodes, probably because I'm like obsessing and watching the episode over and over and over again, like a crazy person.
Yes.
Anyway, do you have any closing thoughts for this week coming in the next week?
Just, you know, pretty much what I said before. I think that I think Daniel is going to, I think the reason he was so sort of willing to just stand there in this episode is because he has already got a plan. He's going to go chase after her in the next episode. And I think he's going to take Maddie with him. And I don't know if Maddie will take Travis. I don't know if the whole family will go, but I'm pretty sure Daniel is going to go hunt for his wife.
I tend to think that they will. I think Travis, just looking at the expression he had at the end of the episode there, got a rude awakening.
Yeah.
He's kind of been looking at the situation with rose-colored glasses, thinking about how fortunate he is and all that stuff. And it doesn't seem like the military is the question I have is not only like why are they killing, but what's their intentions for those 12 safe zones? Do they have some weird objective there? I don't know.
That is a good question.
I hope that we will get some answers in the next episode, but you never know. So our next episode, and it's interesting to note because the episode is Cobalt.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because if you may recall, when they announced the show, its original kind of working title or code name was Cobalt. So makes me wonder, is this going to be a pretty big episode, one that kind of frames the entire season?
I think so. We had there was a fair amount of discussion on the Facebook group also about Cobalt, and someone said that it was a military term.
Yeah, I actually looked it up and I didn't find anything conclusive on that. There was one site that said something about common objective alignment team, which I don't know what that means, but it seemed like one of those websites that tries to make
an acronym out of nothing.
Yeah. So I don't know. It could be true, but when I looked at other sites, that was the only site that I saw that on. So, but I know that it was Malika that said that. So maybe she can write back and tell us what she found. But anyway, it is written by David Weiner and directed by, again, the director of this past episode, Carrie Skoglund. And the description is as follows. The National Guard's plan for the neighborhood is revealed. Interesting. National Guard, Army. I'm confused now. But that kind of makes us think that we may find out what we were hoping to find. And lastly, Travis and Madison make a difficult decision.
What do you think their decision is going to be?
Go get Nick? I don't know.
Yeah, could be.
And with that, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And until next time, this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.